2%.
The 2%'s right over here.
Oh, hey, Jenna. I didn't know you shopped here.
Yeah. Anything to support local food. Know what I mean?
I definitely do. Though that's not the only thing you do in the name of Good Eats, obviously.
Well, true. I also host Eating Matters every Wednesday at 5 p.m., where we talk about food policy and how it impacts all of us. Be sure to tune in.
All right, gotta get the plug in there. I get it.
Yep, I'm hashtag shameless.
You know what else you can do to support the local food community, right?
Well, yeah. Make a donation to Heritage Radio Network, the world's pioneer food radio station.
That's right. And I gotta call you out on the whole local thing.
What do you mean?
Well, The Farm Report, A Taste of the Past, Japan Eats. Those are shows that take you around the country and the world.
I'll give you that. So how can listeners give their support?
It's pretty easy. Just go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the big red heart in the top right corner. It's pretty easy from there.
Thanks.
Today's program is brought to you by Nettle Meadow Farm Cheese and Spirits Pairing, taking place on Saturday, June 18th at Nettle Meadow Farm. For more information, visit nettlemeadowcheeseandspirits.com. That's N-E-T-T-L-E, meadowcheeseandspirits.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to
The Men About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are here at the Borg Brujas Brewery in Reykjavik, Iceland, with one of the breweries here. Vali, please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your story and where we are.
Yeah, right. My name is Valker Olkesson. I'm one of the brewmasters here at Ölkerin, and we're now located inside the small trial brewery called Borg within Ölkerin, which is my main job to look after. This brewery started up in 2009, first beer on the market 2010, but the mother company is 100 years old, so it's a long brewing history.
Yeah.
Which we have here. The Borg brand is basically like the craft beer brand of this company, which we have developed even further. So now it's more or less produced in the big system. The small brewery within we are in now is fulfilling its purpose mainly as testing and small batch brewing. Mm-hmm. Here we do our sours and.
Yeah, you're doing a lot of creative things. And how big is this small system for an idea compared to the big system?
This is 10 hectoliter.
Mm-hmm, which is roughly 8.5 barrels for us.
Yeah, something like that. And the other system is 90 hectoliters.
90 hectoliters.
Yeah.
Well, let's ask, what beer, how did Borg get started and what beer did you start with?
Borg started. The role of Borg was developed over the first years, and the role is basically also still developing.
It's like a pilot.
The idea was that the owners and always wanted to have a small system here for the brewmasters to build up the recipes and experiment and so. Yeah, they had talked about it for many years, so they finally went through with it when they had to build this building, a new warehouse. So put a small brewery in. They were lucky enough that a very talented brewer was working at the boiling at the big plant and basically set him in charge of this place here. And he had some other ideas about how beer should be than most people in Iceland at the time, at least. So he kept on pushing, demanding to make beers that he wanted to make. And the owners basically allowed him to get the first IPA, for example, created in Iceland. It's the third beer brewed here, called Ulver. And nobody thought that would do anything. Basically, he was allowed to make it, so he could get it out of his system.
Right.
So this is today by far our biggest seller, and we can't keep up with demand. So, yeah, it was a good call.
How long ago was that IPA made?
It came on the market 2010.
So relatively new to the market. But
yeah.
To the market companies. And a lot has changed in the Icelandic market in Reykjavik. And I'd be remiss not to invite our friends here. We have Margaret, the president of the local homebrew club. No, there's no homebrew club here.
The local fermentation society.
And Siggy.
Former president,
but a present friend, and thanks for helping us get out here. How have you guys seen the scene change as far as like the popularity of craft beer or other flavors in the market over the years?
Oh yes, it's changed tremendously, and Borg has been very influential in that. I mean, if Borg can come around, we'd probably still be drinking the old regular beer, Malgir and his friends here have come up with really creative beers in the last few years. Like you said, started out by making an IPA. The last couple of years, we've seen a lot more coming out here in terms of like saisons, farmhouse ales, and breaded things, all things sour, and try to, or even pushing the IBUs more, getting out more hoppy beers and like that. And people are always excited when new beer comes from Borg.
That's fantastic. You helped arrange or helped steer judges or tasters through a competition recently, and I think it went quite well. And it was pretty fun, and it's pretty amazing to see the kind of things that people are doing here in the country. It certainly speaks to the palate that's changing and the wild stuff that's happening here.
Yeah, that's very nice stuff. We had to try during the weekend, but now there's I think it's 2007, for example. There were four guys in the whole of Iceland that were brewing all grain at home. Two of them today are brewmasters here at Ölgerinn.
Mm-hmm.
That's. This just changed so dramatically in 2007. There was the first small brewery opened up in Iceland, there were three or four of them the first couple of years. I was with one of them, and all the beers that at least I produced when I was at that place, all of them were being made for the first time in Iceland. So it is, of course, the beer scene has exploded, but it's basically exploded from nothing.
That's amazing. Yeah.
So there's nothing going on creatively, as you probably have heard of, and you probably have to explain to your listeners, is the beer ban we had in Iceland until 1989. So we have had a lot of catching up to do.
And even with the lift of alcohol, they still haven't put beer into some of the... The word beer doesn't exist in some of the legislature.
Yeah. It's a long, strange story that nobody fully understands. It's got something to do with politics, so, yeah.
But the more people drink it, and the more that you do as Borg, and the more creative things, and the more people latch onto it, I think that, you know, the people in politics will start to pay attention
and adhere to.
Especially with the commerce that it'll bring to the market, we hope, right? Yeah,
exactly.
If it's anything like what we're seeing in the States. I want to ask specifically about a beer. So we had a friend who, back in New York, that loves your brewery, He wants you to come to Brooklyn, to New York City. But he said he had your Sutra aged in Brenneven barrels.
Yes.
So I want to ask about, since we didn't get to try that, what was that beer? And tell us a little bit about it.
The beer market in Iceland very much split up into seasons because we have the alcohol monopoly. And they sell beers in a wider distribution depending on the season. So Christmas beer sells a lot because it goes into all the stores and everybody excited about trying it.
So you have state-run liquor stores?
Yes,
basically.
Yes. Okay. It's like most Scandinavia and Canada.
Yeah, and some states have that too.
Yeah. But, one season we have here is called Thorri, which is a name from the old Norse calendar, and it's around February. So the breweries can make a Thorabjör beer, and it goes into wider distribution. So we decided when it was time for us to do our first Thorabjör here in Borg that it should be an imperial stout, because we thought it fitted the season, the gloominess of it. And also we are two brewmasters here working, and we both love imperial stouts. So we kept that tradition. We always come out with a different variety of imperial stouts every year. This year we came out with, I think four or five variations. We're making things a little bit more complicated for ourselves always. one of them this year was Surtur that had we released the year before, but we stored some of it away in Brennvin's barrel. Brennvin is the Icelandic aquavit, which actually I'm also head of developing. But
otherwise known as Black Death.
Yes, yes. And very suiting name. As well. so we put some of it in barrels, and turned out great, I think. But the base beer, 9% imperial stout, was quite unique in the sense that we have the old traditional way of smoking meat here in Iceland. As you have probably seen on the travels, there are not so many trees, at least outside of Reykjavik.
Right.
So Icelanders didn't have any wood to burn, so they had to find alternatives. So what they did have was a lot of shit.
Yep.
So,
from what animals?
Horse animals. Sheep in this case.
Sheep manure. Okay.
Yeah, and because it gets blended with the hay and all that. Okay. So many years ago, Icelanders developed the process of smoking meat over sheep shit smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And all Icelanders have tried some of it, and it's a very traditional Icelandic Christmas dinner: sheep shit smoked leg of a lamb. I think it sounds better in Icelandic, so people maybe don't pay so much attention to it nowadays. We send a bunch of malt to a local meadery.
Yeah,
and they smoked it for us just in their sausage smoking oven, basically.
In the traditional way.
In the traditional way, and we brought a beer with it.
And so that's the beer, this imperial style, part of it went in Brennvin barrels.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
How do you how much do you yield every time you make a beer here in this? And how do you decide where it goes?
It's quite a long, complicated answer.
Sorry.
It all depends on what we're doing,
sure.
And now because we're much always. We're focusing more and more into exports, so we have to plan further ahead with that. So the small experimental beers, they are mainly for the Icelandic market.
Right, that's what I'm thinking.
But if we like them enough, and it wasn't too much of a hassle to make them, I know we maybe scale them up and ship them out.
And how often are you brewing on the smaller system here at Borg Experimental?
Yeah, these days it's very random.
It's random.
Yeah, because we are also supervising the quality and the procedures Sure. In the big plant. So.
And this is an extremely large plant. It's very, very well done. The storage. I like when I walked in, there's a malt extract poster on the wall. So you guys were selling malt extract during Prohibition here.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. That brand is 100 years old. The founder started the company with that drink.
And it's still available.
Yeah.
I want to ask another creative, like Icelandic, you know, uniquely Icelandic beer that you've done. What was it, one of your other favorites?
Well, we recently came out with a collaboration we did with Arizona Wilderness called the Purple Hand. That contained a huge load of bilberries. I think it's in English. Well, at least we call it bilberries. We know it is a type of a blueberry in Iceland. That was a very unique beer to make. It's 100% Brett fermented, and then we got 3,000 liters, and we had roughly 500 kilos of berries, which we spent 2 or 3 days, a couple of us, just squeezing and getting the juices out and putting in bags and throwing it into a secondary fermenter, and racked the beer on that. Of course, it got a little bit sour, which we wanted it to be, and I think it turned out beautiful.
It was a beautiful beer, absolutely.
Yeah, but we like to work with Icelandic traditions. Have you tried our old style food?
We haven't gotten to that yet.
Had
a little bit over the weekend, but we hope to jump into a lot of that tonight. So,
yeah, good.
Finally, I'm going to get to the shark, I think, today.
Because when you try that stuff, then you see that the sheepshead smoked.
Part of it is
quite mild and easygoing.
Exactly. Is there anywhere where online where we can keep in touch with what's happening in the experimental thing? Do you document that? It's really just you got to be here, come visit, and check out board.
Yeah, roughly. I mean, check our Facebook site, which is all in Icelandic, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's what Google Translator is for.
Yeah, okay. And then we have on our webpage, borgbrukus.is. Well, we try to update it always with our newest releases. So there's a list of all our beers.
Borgbrukus.
Should be.
.is.
Yeah, but many of our beers, the experimental stuff, just 1,000 liters, and we drink most of the cell, maybe, and maybe goes to a couple of bars. And
sure. So come to Iceland, basically.
Like everybody else.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
See you soon.
Cheers. For men.
Nettle Meadow Farm Cheese and Spirits Pairing is a celebration of good food and beverages in the newly restored Barn Loft event venue at Nettle Meadow Farm in Thurman, New York. On Saturday, June 18th, come sample and savor, then buy your favorite cheeses and beverages to take home. Nettle Meadow cheeses have been praised highly in national media and have won prestigious awards from the American Cheese Society. Taste samples of goat and sheep cheeses paired with an array of local regional wines, beers, and ciders. You'll never forget your first sample of rich, creamy Kunik, Nettle Meadow's trademark cheese. In Esquire, our very own Ann Saxelby said, "Kunik, it may very well be the sexiest cheese in the USA." Nettle Meadow Farm is a goat and sheep dairy and cheese company in Thurman, New York, just below Crane Mountain in the Adirondacks, between Gore Mountain, North Creek, and Warrensburg. It's owned and operated by Lorraine Limbiase and Sheila Flanagan. Both have a great love of animals, artisan cheese, and the unique challenges of farm life. Nettle Meadow Farm was originally founded in 1990, and it's the home of over 300 goats, dozens of sheep, and a variety of farm sanctuary animals. Again, the cheese and spirits pairing is Saturday, June 18th. For more information and tickets, visit NettleMeadowCheeseAndSpirits.com. That's N-E-T-T-L-E, MeadowCheeseAndSpirits.com.
So my name is Eymar. In good Icelandic, it's Eymar. So good pronunciation. And we're actually in my garage, which is in Kobold in the in Reykjavik in Iceland. So this is where we brew.
And you have two brewing partners, so we're going to have them introduce themselves.
Hi, my name is Henrik, and I'm the chef in this collaboration here. And then we got Steini over there.
Yeah, hi, my name is Stein. Steini. We all brew together. We own a company together called the Icelandic Beer Academy that specializes in teaching and talking about beer, and this was kind of the next step. We've been homebrewing like differently or separate for the last, I don't know, five years, and we decided to just do it together.
How long have you guys been brewing together?
In this equipment, 9 months.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, around 9 months.
And then just tell us what your equipment setup is.
So it's a Blickman Breweries setup, 20-gallon setup, and we've got the fermenter, which is I don't know how many gallons, but it's with extension to be able to use with the 20-gallon system. And
it's in a repurposed cooler that is thermoregulated.
Yes, which is borrowed from an unknown company.
Awesome. Now, what did you... it's on permanent loan.
Yeah.
So what did you guys just pour us?
We just poured you a Saison. We actually... It was a big experiment. So it was a Saison we brewed, and we split it into to 4 5-gallon batches. So the reason why we brewed it was that he has some friends at a company called Reykjavik Roasters. They roast the coffee, and they asked Hinne if we could make a beer with their coffee. But the only thing that they wanted was not a traditional imperial style dark beer. They wanted a light beer with coffee aroma but no taste. So we said, of course, let's do it. So we decided to go with the Saison and just brew a very plain Saison, take some coffee beans and just dump it in when the fermentation is on.
Basically dry hop it with coffee beans,
yeah.
And a whole lot of coffee beans. So
yeah. So two different kinds of coffee beans that they selected to give maximum flavors and flavors the tone with a lighter beer. So not very roasted, so it's more into the acidic flowers, nuts, and those kind of stuff, which is, it was a good experiment. So what we did, we had two kinds of different coffee, and we split it into 4 5-gallon batches, and we had to do something with the two others. So we bought some raspberry puree and dumped it in one, and some apricot puree, which we put in the other one. So at the time that when we did that, we were drinking a lot of nice beers. One of the beers was the Rose de Campanas from Cantillon. So we poured some dregs in just to have some fun.
In both the...
No, in the raspberry one. And in the apricot one, we poured some
bread.
Yeah, passion bread from Loxton.
Cool.
Just to...
And so when did you guys keg this?
This was kegged... maybe
a month ago?
Yeah, five weeks.
And how long was it in?
In bottles?
Yeah.
A couple of days.
Yeah, we just bottled it on Friday.
Okay.
And it was kind of just, we let it ferment nice and quietly for about, secondary fermentation for about 4 weeks.
Yeah.
It was just, we just let it pass, we didn't kind of pay too much attention to it.
So one of us did. So we were supposed to keg like a 20-liter, bottle a 20-liter keg. I think we got around 20 bottles that were left of the keg because an unnamed person that lives here in this garage, he actually liked the beer quite a lot. Yeah.
So this is basically the leftovers of the
beer. Understandable.
Yeah, we got less than we anticipated from it.
Let's talk about the Imperial Stout that gave us some hints about the other night.
So we were quite lucky. Yeah, we have quite nice connection. I'm the general manager of McKellar & Friends here in Iceland, and he's the manager of Dill, the pizza place, and the old building as well. And Kex, which is our employees, they host an annual beer festival every year that they fly in a lot of really big name breweries to come in. And he just sent them an email before and said, "Hey, my name is this la 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 la. I'm doing that. You want to come brew with us?" And he said, yeah. So we picked them up after, I think it was the Friday session.
And this is the guy from Surly?
Yeah, yeah.
Jared Johnson, yeah. The head brewer from Surly.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Okay. So he came with his wife here. We had some good time. We brewed the beer. We drank a lot of beer as well.
And some Indian takeaway and drunk, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of our motto. We kind of like everything we do. We want to have fun while doing it. That's how we keep our passion. That's how we keep what we're doing. And we like it, and we're having fun as well. That's what homebrewing is all about. If you don't have fun and you don't fool around a little bit, it doesn't really matter if you ruin one or two beer because you're fooling around. You learn from the progress as well.
So what we did with the beer is basically we took the recipe from Darkness and made it into Icelandic version. So the Sweden, we put some birch syrup, and then we had the Icelandic coffee. And
birch syrup is like maple syrup.
Basically.
Right? Similar to you collect the sap and you...
But you need like, for 1 liter of birch syrup, you need 8 liters, to then you boil
sap.
It down. Yeah.
Okay.
So instead of like maple, you need 40 liters. So you have the double amount that you need to just make 1 liter.
And is there one short birch sap season?
No. Here? It is now until like June, July. Okay. So you have to collect it now.
Cool.
And then we use the Icelandic coffee. That they of course, it's not Icelandic, but it's roasted here. And they do all the preparation. And the same with the Kaggenips. And then we use some Tahiti vanilla in it as well, so basically the chef doing something to get some. This is what we do, just like to infuse creme brulee and stuff like that. So
that's what we love. I mean, we have brewed beer that has been really bad, and that's actually quite nice. And we try it, and we know, so we figure out what was wrong. Like I told you yesterday, I mean, even though you tried some bad beers at the beer festival, I learned so much, even though I threw them away and said they were completely horrible. I mean, you learn of everything. You learn both of beers that are nice and you learn of beer that are not that good. So that's the most important thing of it all, that always be open-minded about learning. Because when we get the opportunity to talk to you guys, learn, opportunity to talk to other guys, learn. I mean, my uncle who has brewed once, I can learn from him. You can learn from everybody when it comes to beer.
Absolutely.
What are some of the biggest challenges of, and I can include everyone in here, so we're here with three other homebrewers as well. What are some of the bigger challenges or challenges you faced homebrewing in Iceland?
Not being caught by the police.
I mean, do you have ingredient challenges or?
Actually, no. We have a very good supply.
Yeah, we have.
Now.
Yeah, it's up until maybe 5 years ago, it was a bit difficult, but there is one guy who is very dedicated to, you know, the distribution and ingredients, and he does a damn good job.
Yeah, does a really good job.
You guys have good clean water?
Yeah, we have. Yeah, well, the water is very clean. It's very, very soft.
Very
so we
neutral,
have to,
right?
Yeah, we're neutral. We add a couple of things into it usually. So, but hops is probably the most difficult thing to get over some period of time.
Yeah,
that's like right now is really good. You usually got this the first crop now, and later on this year it's going to be some difficult to get some new hops. So I think this the same wherever you go, it's always hard to get some hops. Yeah. So.
I think it's more because we always look at a little bit ahead of time, and we know and Kelly, who owns the Brew.is, which is the main like home brewing shop, or the only one, I should almost say. We talk a lot to him, and we know, I mean, in a year, it's going to be harder than it is now. The problem is out there, and everyone knows about the problem. That's probably what scares us the most of. It's not getting, I mean, we can get Citra and Cascade and St. Helena and everything right now, but what will happen in a year? The limit that he will get to Iceland, if he will get any, it will literally be the first come, he will just buy everything, and the rest of the homebrewers won't get any. But they're starting now some experimental with Icelandic hops. We're looking
we
at like
bought
a,
all of the yeah, first crop of the Icelandic hops.
Yeah.
So the
are
girl
they growing them in hothouses?
Yeah, growing in greenhouses. And she accidentally worked at the same place as I do. They just got some sponsored for it, so it's gonna be at least 3 years of experimental, but we bought the first 2 years of their experimentals.
Awesome. Very cool.
I think it was 2014, 2015. 2015, I got contacted by an imported company here in Iceland Two Roads and Evil Twin had contacted them to see if they want to do a collaboration in Iceland. So I got contacted by them and see if a brewery that I worked like a small part-time for were interesting, and I just said yeah in for them. So they changed ideas from time to time, and we did want to make a ghost. So we decided to use like Icelandic ingredients, and we used Misa. What's Misa in English?
That's wheat.
That's
wheat.
That's
like
whey.
The liquid from when you strain the yogurt.
Yeah. And then we use skyr as well, the Icelandic yogurt, into it. And we just used that to get the pH scale down in the sour mass. I think we're one of the first. I don't know if Homebrewers has done it before or not. But now there's, I mean, in the competition we were judging on Saturday, there was a lot of beer with those.
There's like at least 3 or 4 or 5.
Yeah, yeah. And then we added Spurk smoked sea salt as well into it.
So wait, did you do a sour mash?
We did a sour mash, yeah. Okay. But we did it for really a small time, actually. It's a funny story about the beer. I'm not supposed to say it, but I will do it either way. The beer, the pH scale, it got down. But we only sour mashed it for like 12 hours because we were really in a rush and we just couldn't wait more because we actually wanted to brew together. And the beer turned out to be phenomenal on kegs, but really boring on balls. And I literally think the beer actually just got boring. And when they were kegging it, it got some infection, so it got like super sour on kegs. But we sold every single keg like that. But the balls itself, I didn't like the ball. It was not that sour, it's not that salty. And they then, both Two Roads and Evil Twin, they that did that beer in the States. I actually did my brewing intern at Two Roads, and they were brewing it there, and I came with some Icelandic ingredients, and that's the beer called Geysu Goes.
And that also, so you said you used birch smoke?
I think in that beer there came also birch smoked sea salt. But we at least added Icelandic yogurt to it.
Cool.
We brought that from Iceland.
Cool.
But yeah, I mean, it's just a way to get the pH scale down. Why not use it? I mean, it's...
And introduce some lactose.
Yeah, it's just pure lactose.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I mean, so if you have that ingredients, why not use it? And it also makes a good story.
Yeah.
Everything that is a good story sells.
Yeah. So you managed to pick some up today at a co-op.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And some of the ones that we had were quite
nice. Were actually quite nice. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, a lot of them. I mean, some of the Berliner Weiss we had was made of that was actually just quite good.
Yeah, nice targets.
Yeah, yeah, they were.
Awesome, thanks. Yeah. So what, you guys used local birch sap, used some other local Reykjavik or Iceland ingredients. Have you used anything else in your brewing?
We actually brewed on last Friday, which was a small session IPA. And we just, you know, out of fun, we used some thyme in it. But that was... I don't know if it was even Icelandic.
I think it was Icelandic.
Yeah.
But we used quite little. It was just to make a story.
Yeah.
So it's actually a guy who's holding a big party, and he's a really good friend of ours. So we're like, hey, let's brew the beer for the party. Let's have fun. And we said, you kind of need, because when it comes to beer today, you kind of need a story behind everything just to be able to sell it and to people will like it actually more if there's a story behind everything. So we said, what do you want to do? And some idea passed, and he then just came with Arctic Thyme. And then we decided to, we boiled. I mean, he is turning 37, and his birthday was the 20...
It was on the 28th.
28th, so that was total 65. So we boiled the beer for 65 minutes, and we mashed for 65 minutes. Just a lot of, like, a little bit of gimmicky stuff, but it's just to make a nice story so he'll be able to tell his friend at his party, like, hey, we did that and that and that.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much, and cheers.
Yeah, cheers.
Fermenta about it.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.